You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
I kept waiting for him to upload the Intersect into his head so he'd be able to do a bunch of cool spy stuff. I was very confused as to what was happening. I was so excited to see it. I was like, finally, they made a movie. No?
Never saw the TV show.
Okay.
I don't get the reference.
There was a TV show called Chuck.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe I remembered it was called The Intersect. At this literally at the last second of panic, I was like, oh, it's The Intersect.
It's one of those shows. I watched the pilot and I was like, this seems interesting. And then I just never.
Dude, I watched all of it. I don't know why. It's not like it was great, but for some reason, something in it just went. Every time I was about to give up on it, I'd be like, oh, no, that's cool.
Well, and
I
go right came back. Along at a good time where Hollywood realized, wait a second, we can actually service the geek community in a way that will engage them. And from Chuck, we really got Big Bang Theory. Like, Big Bang Theory wouldn't have happened the way it did without Chuck.
So we have Chuck to blame for Big Bang Theory then.
Probably.
But this has nothing to do with either. This is actually about a pretty famous, well, somewhat famous boxer named Chuck Wepner. I mean, he was probably more famous in the 70s because this guy, you know, his biggest achievement is he went toe-to-toe with Muhammad Ali for 15 rounds and no one expected him to last more than a minute.
Yeah. And what's interesting about this movie is that it makes that fight kind of, buries it in kind of the first act. It's like, well, you kind of expect that to be the centerpiece of the movie, and it's not. And it's like, but there's a great movie to be made from that. And there was a great movie to be made from that, and that movie was Rocky.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Because that's kind of the point. This is the story of a guy who's an almost-ran, who, like, really almost, as he kept saying, I was almost the champ of the world, and spent the rest of his life just kind of living with diminishing returns over that fact.
Yeah.
You know? And you've got Liev Schreiber, who's great at playing these sort of roles, this sort of, like, big palooka, like, kind of washed-up guy. Yeah. It, like, couldn't be... I can't imagine anyone else even in this role, except for Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a weird premise to, like, basically the elevator pitch for this must have been something like, yeah, you remember the movie Rocky, right? How it was like based on a real guy. We took the most interesting parts out of his life and made Rocky. But what if you made a movie out of the rest of the stuff?
About the stuff that wasn't as interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, in terms of like a character piece, which this most certainly is, Liev Schreiber's in every single shot of this movie pretty much.
Yeah.
Except for the ones that focus on the worst fashion parts of the
70s. Yeah.
And even a lot of those. I mean, it starts off here, he's married to Elizabeth Moss, who is really having, like, I mean, her career is going gangbusters right now. Like, The Handmaid's Tale just turned into a massive hit for Hulu and for her. So more power to her.
Great show.
Yeah, and she's a great actress. She's, you know, she definitely loves him. They have a daughter together, but she also realizes this guy is kind of no good too. Like very early on, she realizes, wow, he is a cheater, and it's clear their relationship is kind of always on the rocks.
I did find that interesting because, like, in as much as Rocky was inspired by this guy's life, the two characters couldn't have been any more different. Like Rocky Balboa was devoted to Adrian and only Adrian.
Yeah.
This guy, not so much.
Well, I mean, it's clear like Rocky was definitely taking the mythological aspects as opposed to what was going on with this guy.
Sylvester Stallone combined Chuck Wepner's story with the movie Marty.
Yeah.
And got aspects of that. So, you know, the whole nobody loves me type of thing that he built in with Adrian and that sort of thing and making it that love story was very different than what actually happened with Chuck Wepner. So there's details I didn't even know. Like, I didn't even know that the, wrestling fight in Rocky III was inspired by an actual fight that Chuck Wepner did.
Yeah, he actually fought, if you want to call it that, Andre the Giant. Or that lock-in might have been inspired by Chuck Wepner going to prison.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, probably not, but it could have been. Maybe Sylvester Stallone was kind of obsessed with Chuck Wepner.
It's one of those things. I don't remember the movie at the time, but I mean, I guess an easy criticism of Lockup might have been, oh, Rocky goes to prison. And
yeah.
I think it was
on the Blu-ray package.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing, though. This guy, you're watching this guy, is kind of like, he's more confident than he deserves to be. His biggest skill is he even says, like, I'm just great at taking punches. Like, you could punch me from dawn till dusk, I just won't fall down. Yeah. I mean, even when we finally get to seeing the fight between him and Ali. He's just determined to make it to the end, just like in Rocky. He's like, man, I can't even feel any pain. It just, I feel a thud as he hits me. But that's about it. I'm more hearing it than feeling anything. He's just kind of like, whatever, keep hitting me as long as I get to 15. Yeah. he's pathetic from the get-go. He's weird that he's almost just like his skull is too thick, and that's why he's gotten this far, and maybe why he's not gotten as far as he should.
When I think this movie, if it's about anything, it's about finding his dignity and reclaiming his own story.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily agree that he's pathetic, but I guess
well, he's pathetic up to that point.
Yeah.
Still.
Well, the patheticness is kind of easily understood if you kind of liken it to kind of how depending on if you're really into reality TV these days or not, but it's like if you look at somebody who's like a really famous reality TV star, mm-hmm. most people will be like, oh, give a shit. You're not.
Yeah. Once the show's over, right. Fuck off.
Yeah. And at the time, they're in the middle of their 15 minutes of fame. They think the world revolves around them. And maybe a few people care about them and want to meet them, but for the most part, most people couldn't give a shit.
Yeah, and it's kind of like this guy, he's the big fish in the very small pond of the town in New Jersey that he's from. I mean, everybody goes anywhere and he's like, the champ! Yeah. What's the champ? And hot chicks still want to sleep with him. And he's like, yeah, this is great. But, you know, that's the thing. This movie, mm-hmm. once it gets into, I mean, I was enjoying as much as I kind of did feel, wow, this guy is a, like, just waiting for the expiration date to hit the whole first third or half of this movie. Once it gets past the Ali fight, it's kind of like, man, watching him make all the dumbest mistakes he could possibly make and just go his life just rapidly spiraling downhill. Right. If I have a real criticism here, it's just that I felt like at the end, all he'd learned was really not to be that stupid. It's like he still wanted to pretend he was Rocky Balboa.
Yeah.
You know?
So an interesting thing that this movie does is it plays with time. I mean, Liev Schreiber doesn't really age much in the role. Mm-hmm. Like, he gets a little bit grayer, but that's really about it.
Yeah, barely detectable.
And at the end where they do, this isn't really a spoiler, but yeah. They take a picture of him and then they show that he's much older in the picture than he is in the scene. And just the timing, you know, he looks like it's still the 70s. But, you know, when Planet Hollywood would have been open and that sort of thing, that would have been, like, early 90s, probably.
Right, right.
Before they showed the picture, I was thinking, I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah. But also, like, the movie Lockup, that was filmed, what, 88, 89?
That was at least mid to late 80s, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, even that, you know, obviously, the timeline's kind of screwy. And I think they did that on purpose to where this is how Chuck sees himself. He still sees himself as somebody who, you know, went the distance with Ali. He still sees himself as being in the shape when clearly he's not. The rest of the world sees it, but he doesn't.
Sure.
And I think that's a conscious decision. And I kind of think reflecting on that and the way they reveal at the end, I like that.
Yeah, I did too, actually, and I agree with you. I think that's the moment where you realize that you've been looking at him this whole movie through his own eyes.
Right.
Really. Which he's like, there's even a very telling scene where he like has that moment where he sees himself on TV for the first time, and then he's almost kind of freaked out by his own reflection.
Right.
You know, in the blank TV screen. Also interesting in this movie, Jim Gaffigan, who's unrecognizable because he's just made himself look like he just came off a 30-day bender and is about to die of liver failure, plays his best friend.
He plays, it's a really good character actor turn. Like,
yes.
If we didn't know him from stand-up, we would have been like, who is that guy?
Yeah, absolutely. I
recognize him because I knew he was in the movie. He's like, this has to be Gaffigan.
And it's one of those, like, is that Gaffigan?
Yeah.
Even though we've all seen him a billion times.
You can still kind of hear the voice, but yeah, he did look like he ate an entire box of Pod Pocket.
Yeah, he really did. And he's just, you know, I mean, he's kind of the toady to Chuck.
He's the Philip Seymour Hoffman in Boogie Nights character.
Yes, he is. As well, smaller roles from Michael Rapaport, who plays his estranged brother. Pooch Hall played, I thought did a pretty good job playing Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, he definitely gets the voice down a little bit better than Will Smith did, but the physicality, I think, probably a little closer to him also, but less buff.
I've got to give
barely in the movie.
True.
So.
I got to give special notes, though, to the guy who they had actually play Sylvester Stallone, Morgan Spector, who was just killing it as a young Sylvester Stallone. I was like, God damn, you look and sound exactly like a 20-something Sylvester Stallone.
He looked to me like Paul McCartney and Sylvester Stallone got merged.
Had to merge into one person.
Yeah.
It kind of made me, though, appreciate just thinking back to Kurt Russell and Guardians of the Galaxy and when they did that aging effect. Like, Kurt Russell clearly must not have had very much plastic surgery over the years to, like, alter his appearance that much. Because, like, otherwise you get the feeling if they had more money, they would have just been like, well, let's get the real Stallone and just make him look younger.
Right.
He was so vastly a different human being at that time, they couldn't have possibly done it. So, yeah, it's interesting that they found a good impersonation.
Like, it actually seemed like he might have been overdubbed at first. I don't know if he was or not, but it seemed like he might have been overdubbed because it's like, well, that's clearly Sylvester Stallone's voice.
It sounds a lot like him.
It's like, did they get Stallone to ADR some other guy? I don't know.
Ron Perlman plays Wepner's manager. And
also
I just
almost
see,
unrecognizable.
Yeah, and I just wanted to see more of him. I was like, man, he has lost himself in this role. Yeah. He's great.
I mean, he
it's not often you get to even ask Perlman to step outside of the type of roles he always does, and this is one of those occasions.
I mean, he looks more like Tor Johnson than Ron Perlman here.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's what I was trying to think of. You're right. It was Tor Johnson. And every time he called him Bubba, I just loved it. I was like, oh, you got to do that more often. And then last of all, Naomi Watts plays Wepner's. Yeah. It says who is his third wife. Apparently, there was a first wife because he was married to someone before Elizabeth Moss. The trailer sells it as if Elizabeth Moss is barely in this movie and that Naomi Watts is like plays the wife for most of it. And that is so totally not the case here. She is just a minor supporting character that has some meaning and some resonance in the third act and looks incredibly hot. No question. But
The 70s look good on her.
Yeah, the 70s definitely look good on her. But for that record, they look terrible on almost everyone else in this movie. Like, this is not a film.
I loved Liz Moss' haircut.
I liked her hair too, but the clothing was not so good in this. I mean,
it looked accurate.
Yeah, it was.
Mix in actual footage.
But every time we see a 70s thing, they're always like, I mean, it always looks like, wow, the 70s were actually kind of cool. They always take the best examples.
Right.
And this was like, they went out of their way for the worst shit they could find. Yeah. Like, the jacket he's wearing throughout this thing is the ugliest jacket that mankind has ever produced.
I don't know why. Maybe it's for the way he was wearing it. I was like, I kind of dig that jacket.
Really? Oh, no.
I would never wear anything.
It's
going
to be the new Drive jacket. Everyone's going to have the jacket
and
Chuck.
Oh, no. Don't bring that jacket back, please. It was so awful.
I don't think I could pull it off, but like, I did it find myself at one point.
I don't think I could put it on.
He's just where every time he wore it, I just kind of winced a little. I was like, no, those lapels, they're bigger than your head.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Well, guys, let's bring this into final thoughts and start with George.
I really loved Elizabeth Moss. I think that normally, you know, you have like an ex-wife character and she's a shrew and everything like that. And I thought they did a really good job of balancing the family and making her human and relatable. And you could tell it was made with the family's input as far as that goes. And nobody in this feels one-dimensional. It's framed very much like two Scorsese movies, Goodfellas and Raging Bull. And you can't help but have echoes of that. But it's interesting the way that this brings up other movies. They literally work in a boxing movie that he was a big fan of that starred Anthony Quinn. I forget the name of it.
Requiem for a Heavyweight.
And then, of course, you know, from the point that Rocky's introduced, like, he can't really escape that. And I thought it's interesting. The director, I'm not really that familiar with him, Philip Fowler-Dew.
Yeah.
I know that he made a film that was nominated for Academy Award for Best Foreign Film, like 2011.
Mansoor Lazar.
Yes.
Which I have not seen.
I
don't even know anymore.
But overall, I like this movie. I like that it's Chuck Wepner, you know, reclaiming his own legacy. And, you know, what does it all mean to have this kind of brush with fame and to ride it out and to not really get much from it and to kind of let it destroy you, but then still find a way to redefine your own life and just to survive. And, you know, if you look at the way that he was hit and he just kept moving on in the ring, this is a story about how he did that in life as well. And I really like that aspect of it. I think, you know, there's a lot of good people behind this, and it's hard to feel slightly underwhelmed, but at the same time, like, the more I sit with this, I think I'll appreciate it even more. So overall, I would probably give it 8 of 10 points on the back end. but that's net, so it's nothing. You'll never see it.
It's true.
Yeah.
What is it? There are people who still like haven't seen a cent from the Star Wars movies because
they never turned a profit. Return of the Jedi never turned a profit.
You're like, what? JC?
Well, I thought this would be a little bit more of a sports movie than it was, but I, because I didn't see any trailers, I just kind of knew of the character and how he was based on, how Rocky Balboa was based on him. But I still found this really interesting. I think it kind of occurred to me how, I guess, underrated, or maybe how much we kind of take for granted Leo Schreiber. Like, there's a ton of really great actors out there. You never really hear his name being mentioned in there, but he is really good when he's given the room to, like, really, really stretch his legs. So I thought he did a really great job here. Everyone did a really great job. This is kind of one of those movies that shows you can throw an ensemble cast together. You don't need a ton of money. If it's written well, directed well, you can put together a good movie, a really interesting movie. Most of the time, I don't even like Michael Rapaport. I liked him in this. He only had a couple of scenes, but one of them was really good towards the end, really emotional. Yeah, I would give this overall 7 out of 10 Ali punches.
You know, to me, this was kind of movie was kind of like Chuck himself, and that it's very amiable. It's hard not to like it for a while, but there's a point where you just I just kind of got burned out on it, and I saw it taking a lot of familiar turns and doing a lot of stuff not as good as other movies had done it before, but the same thing that they did. And it was just kind of patiently trying to get through it until we get to that those third act redemption moments that were actually extremely well done here.
Yeah, what's the runtime on it?
You know, it felt really short.
1 hour, 41 minutes.
Wow. Okay. So.
But the credits kicked in like the 1 hour, 33 minute mark.
Right.
So really, it was 8 minutes of credits.
Yeah, there you go.
Just so, a little tightening.
Just over 90 minutes.
But you're right, all the performances are strong. The writing on the whole is pretty tight. Liev Schreiber is the guy who's carrying this movie. It wouldn't have worked if somebody wasn't able to have this much weight on their shoulders as he is. When he gets a nice juicy role and he really gets to dig in, he is the guy to do it. I mean, I still say he is the only thing we should have kept from X-Men Origins Wolverine. He was made such a great Sabretooth.
Up to and including Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, well, fair enough. After that, I wasn't ready to forgive him completely. Yeah.
And yet we got Deadpool and that worked out.
Yeah, we
too,
did. So. Yeah, but well, not the same Deadpool.
Exactly. Yeah.
We got a couple. I would directly credit a funny joke from the Deadpool movie that we got from X-Men Origins existing. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I mean, liked it, didn't love it, thought it kind of ran through its paces for a while, but it was still, for a workman-like production, it was still kind of a pleasure to watch regardless. I'm going to give this 7 out of 10. Just, I cannot emphasize enough hideously ugly jackets. I mean, like, oh my God. Just like the opposite of like fashion porn.
Well, I think there's a good mix of really terrible fashion and actually good fashion. Like, 1 out of 4 extras is just like, okay, that's a good outfit.
Well, no,
and that's like the 70s.
Elizabeth Moss has nice hair, but until we get to the point where he starts going to actual discos with rich people, everyone is just hideous. And then, all of a sudden, it's all close-ups of hot pants.
Yeah, fine. I'll take back your birthday present.
If it's that, you can indeed keep it. Not the hot pants. I'll take those.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Club, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.